Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is one of our deep dives, our Bacta tank of talk. We're going to sink in and see if we have a flashback. I'm Joseph Scribshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok. So, so ready to have a flashback? Oh, that's a weird statement, but I think I'm ready. This is going to be fun.
Absolutely. We are embarking on a new journey. We had a kind of a fun behind the scenes process where sometimes we want to talk about a topic and then I write up some questions or Ken writes up some questions. We both do together. In this particular instance, I was writing up questions and I'm like, that's a little bit long for one episode. Why don't I cut these questions and these questions and these questions? And what I was originally kind of imagining is one or two episodes, I think, is going to be a long series discussing the magic of lightsaber fights. That's what you were listening to. Part one of the magic of lightsaber fights, lightsaber duels. This episode, we're going to talk kind of like the big picture of what we think about lightsaber fights and their importance and their thrill. And then we're going to spend some time discussing kind of the original, chronologically in the real world, the original lightsaber fight in A New Hope between Kenobi and Vader, and then we're gonna just take them just a couple at a time.
Yeah,
because originally it's like, we'll do the ones from the original trilogy, then we'll do the prequel. I'm like, oh no, those episodes will each be 7 hours long. So that's what we're doing here today. Any thoughts on that, Ken?
No, this is a great series. So happy to embark on it on this lightsaber journey. But yeah, initially I think I was on the let's look at every single lightsaber fight in Star Wars. Let's analyze it in that Force Center way. Then I realized at some point we'd have to come to the Clone Wars series. And despite just doing the Clone Wars report in depth for the last few years, quite frankly, I was like, oh, we'll be here till 2030. So yeah.
Yeah.
This is good.
Just Revenge of the Sith. Getting to there and deciding which fights count as a lightsaber fight for the purposes of our discussion. Revenge of the Sith might be its own episode. As always, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are recommending Leia, Princess of Alderaan by Claudia Gray, a great book all by itself and really fun to revisit after we spent some time with Leia in the Obi-Wan Kenobi television program. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for your free audio book. Any thoughts on Leia, Princess of Alderaan, Ken?
It is on my reread list, and that's a list that just kind of hangs in the air over me while I read other Star Wars books and try to read non-Star Wars books. You and I always talk about that fun struggle. As of the time of this recording, I'm about halfway through Shadow of the Sith and enjoying it greatly. So Leia, Princess of Alderaan, is going to have to wait one more day, but I want to revisit that with a lot of the new things we've learned and seen in Star Wars since this book came out.
Yeah, it would be a really fun one to revisit, so I'd be very happy to do that. We are going to dive into the lightsaber fights, but first we have one more caveat. We are actually trying to get ahead of our recording schedule, so we are coming to you from the past. As we record this, we've just finished talking about part 5 of Obi-Wan Kenobi. By the time we release this, part 6 will be out, and the entire Obi-Wan Kenobi story will be known. We don't yet know it, so you can wallow in our ignorance. We don't know what the big finale of Kenobi is as we record. I suspect that there's maybe going to be some lightsaber fighting in it, which might impact some of the conversation that we have. So we just wanted to be sure to let you know when we're recording this. Any thoughts on that, Ken?
Yeah, it's always great. The idea of getting ahead is always just a wonderful thought. But in the world of Star Wars, you know, things change and things, we get new context almost every week with these shows and comics and books. So it's a dangerous game we're playing, Joseph. Dangerous game.
We are like Luke in some of those photos from A New Hope. We are sticking the lightsaber hilt up toward our eyes and risking great danger. All right, let's get into this. Lightsaber fights, lightsaber duels. They're a key part of the thrill and the core themes of Star Wars. And like so many things in Star Wars, there are a lot of strong feelings about what makes a really good lightsaber fight. And the fights, not the fights about the fights, but the actual fights in the movies have evolved over the years in everything from technology, scale, choreography, medium. And now lightsaber fights are making this a big leap to live action television. We've seen a little bit of conflict in The Mandalorian with lightsabers, but now we are getting with Obi-Wan Kenobi full on lightsaber dueling to celebrate the big lightsaber mood that's going along in the Star Wars community. We are going to look at all these fights, starting with the big one in A New Hope. But first, let's talk overview. Ken, for you, what makes a good lightsaber fight? Is it the thrill, the spectacle, the emotion, a mix of everything?
It's whirs and spins, whirs and spins. look, I guess the easy answer is a mixture of everything, thrill, spectacle, emotion. But coming from the vantage point of the original trilogy kid, I think, I don't know, I almost kick it back to you as a question. I think we do tend to focus on the big emotional stakes. I don't ever want to go back and make myself seem like a smarter Star Wars fan than I was back in my days, you know, any era, but especially when I'm a kid. I wasn't like 7 on the playground at Margaret Harlow Elementary School in Rio Grande, California, going, folks, there's some big emotional stakes in this fight in Return of the Jedi. Have you considered them? No, I wasn't me. Wasn't me, but I think we're naturally, they're so well just baked into those fights. We did gravitate towards that, which, you know, is interesting to get to the prequel era where I think that was very much there, but wrapped up in a different package, and why I initially kind of resisted that and went back to the OT fights as those ones have more meaning. I don't think that's necessarily correct, but it felt like it at the time because it just was so clear in the original trilogy. Every fight did seem to be about something. It seemed to be on the screen. And I think that's what, at the end of the day, makes a good lightsaber fight to me. I still go to those stakes.
so that you want to have a clear idea of who's fighting who. And obviously, you usually know who's fighting who, but what do they want? What are they trying to achieve? What is going to be lost if or won, depending on who wins this fight?
It's become very fun, and this is definitely now, 2022, Ken, going. It's been fun to look at fights, either the new ones we get or to go back to the old ones and really ask the big why question. I think we might refer to it again in, on Force Center and in this conversation, but that Filoni speech in the Disney Gallery series about here's the true duel of the fates at play, it was a beautiful speech, and it was beautiful for being just, I think, just real insightful, but also obviously insightful. And I think a lot of people were like, oh, I hadn't looked at it that way. So I'm always having fun going back and applying to that going forward, the big why of it all. But as a kid, again, words and stakes. You definitely give me a spin, give me a clash of sabers. It is the thrill. It is a spectacle. Not going to downplay that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it is natural for fans who discover Star Wars at almost any age. Maybe not if you're like, I'm a 58-year-old tenured professor of philosophy. This is the first time I've seen Star Wars. Maybe you're going to start with those why questions. But most of us coming to Star Wars at a relatively young age, the thrill of a lightsaber being cool, that is the entry point. It certainly was for me, the buzz and the light and the crackle when two lightsabers hit. I mean, there's been times in my life of people like, what do you want to see or hear on screen of anything? It's like, I don't care how or why, but lightsabers crackling as they meet. Like that thrill is what I wanted. That was one of the things that I said when I had a friend, you know, in the early 2000s, who were just like, you seem to acknowledge some of these flaws of the prequels. Why are you still watching them? Why are you still talking about them? It's like, they got lightsabers.
Yeah.
And I'm drawn to it. So the thrill is definitely there. And it's still there for me. I still want to see cool lightsaber moves and surprising ones. And I still pine for ones being sort of choreographed exactly the way that I really enjoy. And that kind of thing, you're shot the way that I enjoy. And all that kind of stuff that's just about the fun pulp thrill. But I also then do want the why. I want there to be, you know, high stakes, and I want, you know, how this fight turns out to truly change things for the people involved and all that kind of stuff. And I think for me, there was this journey growing up with the original trilogy that it's a blue lightsaber and it's a red lightsaber, or a red lightsaber and a green lightsaber, but it's good and bad. And that is true, but I think it kind of got simplified in some cultural discussions. Is just that it's good and bad, and like yes, it is. But the characters really want different things, and the fights mean different things. And sometimes the characters understand what they're fighting for, and sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. And all those whys are what makes a good lightsaber fight to me. The thrill and those whys.
Big whys, love it. Love it.
Big whys.
Look, I wish I was seven going, kids, friends, the big why is why we're here. But I wasn't.
I think final thought for me on what makes a good lightsaber fight is really, you know, it's easy to say both. But that's to me ultimately what does make a really good lightsaber fight, because I think there's this wonderful tension in Star Wars between the pulp thrill and the deep myth, you know, between the cool action, between something called Star Wars and a story that advocates for peace and connection. Again and again, there's an inherent tension in Star Wars that I think is what makes it fascinating. And lightsabers sit right at the heart of that. If you're celebrating Jedi who don't want violence, want to bring everybody together, who reject revenge, and then kind of the cool thing about it is this blazing blade, you know, and that it's a symbol to them, and they'd rather not use it if they don't have to. There's so much about the lightsaber itself that just sits at the heart of the tension of Star Wars. And I think that's ultimately what makes a really good lightsaber fight, is like, I'm sitting there watching it and like, I kind of just want to go cool, awesome, and, you know, act this out on the playground of my mind. but then I'm also asking why. And I'm like, you know, a moment where I can watch a lightsaber fight and be like, that was the coolest thing ever. That's so awesome. I'm going to rewind it and watch it 500 times. And also, what a tragedy that it's happening at all.
At
the exact same time. This fight should have been avoided. That would have been the better story. But since it's happening, damn, that's awesome.
Damn, that's awesome. No, love that there. And there's something, final tag for me might be going to the original trilogy point of view, right? Which is just, we can't avoid it. It's our perspective. And this, I'm not using this against the prequels, but I've heard that conversation before of, there's just too many lightsabers in the prequels. I'm like, well, of course, look at the era we're in. Mm-hmm. That's what we're studying. So that one doesn't resonate with me as much as I've seen it resonate with other folks. But there's something to say about kind of each film had the fight, right? Again, mm-hmm. I think the prequels have that. But that just, even if I wasn't getting it as a kid, it just, like, this is the fight. This, it builds to this duel. I think that drove home some of the stakes, even if I didn't fully understand them.
Yeah, that it was a part of the finale, kind of. Mm-hmm. I mean, A New Hope certainly comes, you know, at the end of Act Two, arguably. But yeah, but the point well taken, and I'm really excited to look at how they're situated in the story as we go through.
Yeah, absolutely.
So talked a little bit about that very big picture, what makes a great lightsaber fight, the thrill and the depth. For you, Ken, what is just a favorite moment of thrill from any lightsaber fight?
Man, I think I wrote down too many for you here. I'll work through it. First of all, I want to acknowledge something. Maybe this was better in the overall picture, but you said, like, you talk about the crackling and the sound of the sabers hitting, and, you know, when the two blades connect and maybe they don't move right away, and that. How many times as a kid did you make that sound? You know?
Oh, so many, so many.
Yeah. So those are some of the thrills. Absolutely. We talk about the little things. So I guess I'll start with a big one here. And if you're okay with me throwing in a couple behind that, Joseph, let me know. But
let's keep ourselves from not doing a full ranked mini episode.
Yeah. Well, I've lost that battle. I go to Return of the Jedi, and Luke charging out to strike Vader and Return of the Jedi, as the music swells, remains a favorite. Now, I'll say this. Over the years, it's clearly, and it's become, and I understand it, as a big point of near failure for Luke, right? There's a lot of mm-hmm. things going wrong for Luke in that scene. But the way it's shot, the way it looks, I kind of measure a lot of other fights to that moment. It is Luke, in his mind, I don't know, maybe trying to be a hero or what his understanding, but again, giving into a lot of things, including fear. So we can analyze that, and we will when we get to that fight. But that one shot, I always go back to as perhaps one of my favorite shots in Star Wars. This is why I still kind of consider this my favorite lightsaber fight. And that moment just put together so well. You could almost see why, as a 7-year-old kid, as the music swells, Luke jumps out to defend his sister, where I'm like, yeah, that's what you should do.
You're talking about him stepping from the shadows, and he's kind of got it up and out, yes. Right?
And then that shot of, you know, kind of a long shot with their two blades. And by the way, the colors of the lightsabers add a lot to the thrill as well. It's the genius in the design, I guess. And then George going, oh, the blue doesn't stand out against the sky. Give him a green one. And suddenly everything changes. But yeah, it's that moment. And jumping out, and then the chorus starts singing. It's that moment.
No, I can relate to that. I don't know if I've ever said this on the podcast. I know I have talked about my Jedi Knight Luke Skywalker action figure from Return of the Jedi and finding it many times. But one of the things that I was most excited about with that action figure is usually the figure's arms were perfectly straight, but this one, his arm was bent. Mm. And I had all the promo photos of the end of that fight, Vader down on the floor, and Luke just hammering. And there's a shot that was in the storybook. It was a trading card. A lot of places where Luke's arms are both up and bent and ready to bring that lightsaber down. And I thought it was so cool that I could recreate that pose.
Yes.
With my Luke action figure, the hammering down on dad pose. And I just bring that up as a, yeah, when you're kids, you pick up on the action and the thrill and not always the full why. But yeah, I agree with you. That's a thrilling fight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, so what are your runner-ups?
I'm just going to run through. Okay. Both Rey grabbing the hero blade moments in Force Awakens and Last Jedi. Okay, those ones, whether she calls the blade or intercepts a blade after it bisects Snoke. Love those moments. It might be on your list. We'll talk about them more and more, especially when we get to the fights. So that's a bigger moment. From Episode 9, I know I can never convince anyone that doesn't like that movie to like it. I know that's, I can't do that. That's, I got to let that go. But Rey and Kylo fighting on the Death Star ruins in the waves. I sometimes just want to point at that and go, can you at least give me that and say, that's cool. When they both jump into the waves and you see the blades and the water. I just had never really seen that in Star Wars before. And I just really love it. And I just love that fight. There's a lot to it, but like little moments like that kind of make, make these big Star Wars, memories for me, if you will, of like, oh, the first time I saw that, I just love that. She leaps and he leaps and just a great fight in the water. It's something I hadn't really seen before.
Oh, yeah. And with the huge waves. No, that's up there for just being thrilling, you know, and that's I think that is an important thing that we'll talk about as we go along about the evolution of lightsaber fights from all the different perspectives, from the technological perspective, but also the how to keep them fresh, how to represent the character in the story, but also just to, like, here's something you've never seen in a lightsaber fight before. Yeah. Here are all the possibilities. This great tip of the iceberg ignites with the first ignition of a lightsaber, and you want to explore that. And I know it's for some people, like, they don't like it because it looks too super powered or whatever, but I love the leaping over the huge crashes of waves. It's just thrilling. And I love talk about just a moment of thrill. It's upsetting too, but the way the music is synced with Kylo hammering down on Rey's blade, breaking her defenses and breaking her will. Mm-hmm. Ugh, that's a thrilling moment. Upsetting, but thrilling.
Thanks. And the final one, I'll sneak this in. I apologize. In Cloud City, when Luke, there's a moment where he kind of strikes Vader. I didn't watch the fight this morning. It hits him in the shoulder and he gets the sparks and Vader does that and gets so pissed and he just cuts through those pipes. I just have always loved that moment. I don't know. I feel Vader in that moment, like, God bleep, and cuts the pipes. There's something about it I've always loved.
Yeah, it really is a great moment in that fight. I've had that thrill because, I was so pro Luke and I wanted him to just be stronger and wanted him to find a way to win and clung to the, even though he clearly loses in Empire Strikes Back, no ambiguity, clung to the cool moments, which we'll talk about when we get to Empire. And that's one of them. Is like, at least he got that shot in.
Yes. And then for the negative side of my life, I have a pretty even keel guy, but I have those little bursts of temper. I struggle with that. So that's Vader's me when I drop something. And I just have a little explosion of, let me cut some pipes.
That is like as close as Vader gets to like Homer Simpson stubbing his toe, right? All right. But it's also just such a great, like, okay, I'm testing this kid. Oh, he's got some chops, but he's nowhere near what he needs to be. Yeah. And I'm winding him down. Oh, the little bleep got a shot in. No more. Yeah. No more. All right. All right, kid. Yeah, a lot going on in that thrilling moment. Totally understand you wanting to shout out a lot of the thrilling moments. For me, I'm just going to go to the Phantom Menace. This is one that is controversial because I know some people love it and some people really don't like it. I have a good friend who's like, I do not like the Kenobi and Maul part of the lightsaber fight in the Phantom Menace. It looks like they're dancing. They're supposed to be fighting. Not dancing.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
I was there in about the spring of 2001.
And I have never been there. I've seen a lot of dance and some of it's really cool. Really cool. Really good. A lot of modern dance. And I think there's a difference between Kenobi and Maul's fight. There'd be a lot more rolling on the floor if it was modern dance. I rewatched it for this conversation. It's that first phrase. There's a lot going on in the story of it. There's a lot going on in that's the culmination of this massive three-way lightsaber fight. But it's the very beginning of it, you know, Kenobi bouncing on his heels, ready to go. And part of it is the way it's shot, where a large majority of it is just the camera pulled way back and just choreography, fight choreography. But it's the speed of that interaction where it's just these, it is almost to a rhythm. I'm not doing myself any favors by using the words choreography and rhythm and making people feel like it's not a dance. It is dancerly. And that's actually, you know, what I like about it. How fast that phrase is, including Obi-Wan blocking behind the back, right? It was so fresh when you saw it because there's different moves because of the double bladed lightsaber in full action, but just the speed of that exchange, but you can still totally track it. And the fact that this whole, you know, opening salvo between them ends with them both spinning away and resetting, right? Like it really is like they race out with everything they got and they test one another's moves and then they spin apart and go like, okay, I got what this is going to be. And then they go back at it.
Yeah. Yeah. So This is great, by the way, and I don't want to take, I want you to keep explaining this, but as someone who, I said 2001, but like I've over the years have had understood that, I don't know, too choreographed. I've said that on shows before and everything, but then I've had a couple of people explain to me along the way, and I'm talking 2016, 2017 wave of echoing what Lucas has said before, by the way, of look, these are Jedi and Maul, you could say, even Palpatine, Jedi at the top of their game. So it's a totally different thing. And Lucas has said that. And I think once I came to an agreement with that in my soul, going back to those fights, it's not been a problem for a long time. It's been part of the fun.
Yeah, no, the speed and the precision. Yeah, those are, you know, people who have been training for exactly this since, you know, they were 2-3 years old, four years old, you know, unlike Luke is like 19, like, cool, what's this? You know, in a whole different style of fighting, encountering Vader and all those things. But yeah. Yeah. So that is one of the, I could see that a million times and I will always be thrilled and I will always be interested in seeing more fights that are choreographed in film like that, where you can really see full phrases, full interactions of the fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just in part of it is Ewan McGregor and Ray Park's performance, but Ewan McGregor in particular, the way he just comes in with that, like, I'm doing this, you know, I am taking you down. It's thrilling. Absolutely thrilling. So we talked a little bit about thrill. I also want to talk about some favorite moments of story in a lightsaber fight, a moment of true depth told through a laser sword. What are your moments that are resonant, not because of the thrill, but because of the meaning?
Yeah. Going again to Return of the Jedi, I absolutely now love it more than ever. But the even as a youngster, I promise I'm not going to keep saying that the entire time we're talking about this stuff. But it's hard not to separate your first couple viewings of it as a kid versus where you look at how you look at all this now. But in Return of the Jedi, Luke overpowering Vader, those overhand chops, just everything, and getting potentially the first step to a win, cutting off his hand and Vader wheezing on the ground and this monster that's terrified an entire generation of filmgoers is so just beaten and dare I even say pathetic on the ground. And in that moment of Luke realizing this is the path of the dark side and it's not a victory, it's a trap. Like that is everything to me. That is such a core of Star Wars beat and moment and why we're here. And I just remember getting that in Lucas's, you know, genius, Richard Marquand too, the director, just getting that as a kid, again, not taking to the playground and explaining it in eloquent detail, but just going his hand, Luke's hand, the glove here, why he shouldn't be doing this. And I just think it's my favorite example, if not one of the greatest.
Yeah, no, I think that is maybe, you know, one of the greatest lightsaber fight moments, especially Luke's got that zealous look, breathing, you know, hard and sweating, and he's got that look of like victory. He is a little enraptured by it, right? What I dreamt of for so long, can I beat this guy and free the galaxy, you know? There's that moment of this is what I thought it was going to be when I started out on this journey, you know? And he's learned more than that, and you're right to be as a younger person, you get it. You see the sparks, you see, you know what his hand looks like. And it is just the like, oh, he doesn't want to become a bad person like his dad. And then you go deeper into all the different ways to reflect it and how it can reflect real life. But it is a great, great entry point to lightsaber fights are thrilling, but there's deep meaning in them as well. And, you know, I've said this before, but it is one of the things that really, really made me want to find a place like Force Center. I didn't really know I was looking for it. But you know, this is the early 2010s. You know, there was a lot of just fun at conventions, a lot of people, you know, wearing Star Wars shirts and all that, which is great. But I just found people they wanted to make the old jokes. And they didn't want to engage. And I had a person in particular like, Luke's whiny. He's just whiny. He's not a real hero. He just throws his blade down. He's whiny. And I was like, please, can we talk about that? And they're like, nah. It's like, but that's what I want to talk about. That's what the meaning, like, I want to talk about that. And people were like, to my face, literally, no, That's let's just keep making stormtroopers miss jokes, you know?
It's so funny. You're almost 2010s podcasts were already out and about and doing quite well, but it almost like you're having a Goldie Wilson as mayor Back to the Future moment of like, podcasts. I need to start podcasts. Yes. And we can discuss this in more depth.
Yeah. I mean, I should say like, I wanted to talk about that. It never occurred to me to do a podcast you know, life happens and wonderful things happen. So yeah, I think that's a great moment of meaning, the end of that fight. What else you got?
A couple other moments to throw out there. And the fun thing about this conversation, Joseph, is we are, as we always say here, we'll discuss that a little bit later on Force Center. We literally are going to discuss all these moments later on Force Center. But Vader and Empire Strikes Back, that kind of toying with Luke, throwing the objects at him is just so visceral. Luke's overmatched. And it always terrified me as a kid. It was scary to me. The wind and Vader and everything, Vader kind of holding on as he's tossing everything. This is, you know, he tosses the things and then one of the items, of course, breaks the window. That terrified me as a kid. And again, the simple genius of it. And it's simple. It is direct. It is Luke running off to join this fight and being so overmatched. So it works on a deeper level, but just as a kid, literally was a horror show of how painful and sad it looked. Just like, swing harder, swing faster, Luke, come on. And you just kind of get it. And story being told in this wonderful beat. Well,
yeah, tragic no. beat. The tragic beat, but yeah. But like, yeah, even as a kid, I kind of got it. I was like, oh no, Luke's real outclassed. Yeah. And just like, I remember being affected as a kid of like, you know, that you would hear it on television. And I think I had kids even say it to me on the playground. Like, I could beat you with one hand tied behind my back. And it was totally like the weird space fantasy version of that. When Vader's just like, I'm not even coming at you with my blade.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
this isn't even a lightsaber duel anymore. I'm just kind of jazz riffing on how I kick your butt.
Yeah, how I do it. Yeah. And look, I tell you, as a kid, I didn't quite connect the window breaks and that creates air and the suction. Da, 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 da. Like, I didn't get that. I thought that was the Force too. You know, no. I thought Vader was calling up the storms, calling up the winds. I summon the winds. Like, I was terrified of it. Terrified.
Understandable. It's a terrifying moment of like, oh, wow. You didn't understand the true power of the dark side.
Release the dam. Yeah. And the water taking out the tower. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Blow the wind. Yeah. did you say one more?
Quickly, I just want to, the Force Awakens fight, with Kylo Ray and Finn, to be clear, and to give them all the credit in the world. That fight is, I think, in a weird way, becoming underrated to me. I wish it was discussed more. I can't wait to get to it, but there's just kind of those little beats. It's maybe a collection of beats where I kind of describe it as Kylo and Rey both learning her true power and capabilities at the same time. And kind of this, and her going, yeah. Like, I really love that. I can't wait to analyze that a little bit more.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the Finn part of it, too, because it's all part of one big story and everything going on with Kylo Ben. Yeah, there's a ton of great meaning in that. Yeah. I think for me, I'll throw two out there. I know we talk about it a lot, but it's because it's well done. The Obi-Wan and Maul final confrontation in Rebels, I think, you know, one of the, you know, most powerful moments of storytelling in depth within a lightsaber fight is Obi-Wan changing positions, you know, starting positions in that fight with Maul. You know, as an audience member, getting the fun, like, oh, he's doing his Obi-Wan Kenobi pose, but then seeing him go, no, that's not what's needed for this fight, and shifting and luring Maul, like that recognition of he hasn't changed, and I can totally exploit the fact that he has not changed by changing up how I approach this fight. You know, it's really, really, it's such a powerful lesson. Just that moment about, you know, being willing to change and adapt versus not changing and adapting at all, and therefore becoming so predictable as to be almost fatal to yourself. Literally fatal from all, but and it's all in the change of stances. It's all in the pre lightsabers clashing part of the story.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, you're right. You and I have discussed that fight so many times and will again and will in the series. I can't wait to get to it. I'll just say this about that moment. It was one of the times I got to phrase this correctly because I don't want to put us up on a pedestal. Never believe your own hype, kids. But it was just one of the moments where even friends off air just kind of like felt disappointed by the fight, which is their fair opinion to have, by the way. But it was one of the ones where I was like, but have you analyzed why the fight is how it is and the story? And you know, Filoni, I think by the first Rebels Recon YouTube episode, Filoni was explaining it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't necessarily a kept secret, and it's on the screen. But it's just one of the first times I felt the need to just go, no, you got to dig deeper sometimes. And if you do, you might be rewarded. That fight is just, it is everything. It is just so much story in such a small amount of time.
Yeah, no, and I get it. If people, I think that Filoni expertly was aware of people's expectations of a cool big showdown, and I think expertly aware of that tension that we're talking about, that the lightsaber can provide this cool thrill, and you can long for and enjoy long, drawn out, torturous, epic battles. But at the end of the day, that's not what a Jedi craves or what a Jedi wants. It's a, you know, by the time the lightsaber has to come out, that is, you know, a bummer, but you know, in some circumstances it has to be done. And I love that fight sort of like says, yep, it can be thrilling and this is thrilling in its own way, but this is much more about the idea.
Yes.
Yeah. Last one. I wanted to throw out a moment of depth that we've certainly talked about, but maybe have not obsessed on as much here on this podcast. A moment of storytelling where you learn about the character, you learn about the dynamic. It is still thrilling, but it's a moment of storytelling. I'm going to The Last Jedi, and I'm sure there's going to be, when we get to Last Jedi, I want to talk about what is the big lightsaber fight, not duel, but Rey and Kylo Ren using their lightsabers against the Praetorian guards. I understand some people don't like it because it isn't a literal lightsabers clashing. It's, but it is the big lightsaber fight along with Luke and Kylo's confrontation at the end on Crait. But in that fight with the Praetorian guards, when Rey throws the Skywalker blade to Ben, it's just, that tells us so much about Rey. Like, there's the straightforward, we get the plot. She's been drawn closer to Kylo, and she's seen something that makes her believe he's going to turn to the light side. And you know, as she tells Luke, like, maybe if he turns, maybe he can be the thing that turns the tide. There's all that just kind of straightforward plot mechanic stuff. But how much it tells us about Rey that this is the blade that she rejected after it called out to her. And when it mattered most in The Force Awakens, she put her hand out for it. And, you know, when Kylo was raving and raging that it belonged to him, it flew to her. Mm-hmm. And the saber keeps trying to give itself to her, and she keeps trying to give it away, right?
Yeah.
So there's that whole journey with her feeling like, this saber means something to me. I'm the one who it is asking to use it. I'm the one who's being asked to carry the saber, carry the light side, be an inspiration, all those things. But just that after this villain raged for it and she won it, that she's willing to just throw it to him to share power. You're right. And to save somebody that she has come to care about. It just says so much about Rey that she just, without question, she doesn't force push that guy away. She doesn't run over with it to try to, you know, stop that Praetorian herself. She willingly gives it to Ben in this huge act of trust. And it leads to a super cool moment where he just ignites it quickly. And then leads to a horrible betrayal of that trust that Rey gives. But just such a great storytelling moment that Rey is so willing to share the power, the legacy, everything that blade represents with Ben.
As always, well said, but I love this moment. I love it too because the action is Ben or Kylo in that moment, I guess, up for debate, was in his soul. But because the quick igniting of it through the Praetorian's head elicited such a in the theater the first couple of times I saw it by me and a lot of people around me. Love that. But so you can celebrate both indeed. And her shouting Ben, all that stuff. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Wonderful moment.
Yeah, no. And what a great moment also of having fun with the depth in the story and the character that can be seen through these fights. And then a thrill moment, because that's that is damn cool when Kylo Ben just ignites it through Praetorian's eye and turns it right off again.
Do you think she calls out Ben and Ben goes, yeah, yeah, give me that. And he gets the saber, then ignites it. And he's like, oh, that was pretty good. I'm Kylo. I'm having fun, of course. But I was thinking that moment, like, for a second. Oh, yeah. Oh, wait, no, I'm Kylo. That was badass.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think he obviously Ben is always in there, but he's Kyloing pretty hard, I think, in that scene, Kylo. Ultimately. Yeah. So there are many amazing lightsaber moments that are not full on fights in this series. We're going to try to, you know, concentrate on the big conflicts. But look, we got Han cutting open the Tauntaun, right? Luke deflecting the speeder bike shots in cutting the front off of it in Return of the Jedi. One of my favorite lightsaber things ever. Qui-Gon melting the Trade Federation doors. Rey lighting up the cave of the Vexus serpent in Rise of Skywalker. Obi-Wan removing many a hand in bars. There's tons of great lightsaber moments that aren't full-on duels and fights. For you, how much of the magic of a lightsaber is the full-on fight, or how much are you fed by all those little moments?
I love this question. I love this question because it really gets into just some of the what's in your heart, what's your gut reaction to a lot of this stuff. So I love all the moments you've mentioned, and I think you're right. They're their own little splashes of magic. Like particularly, I say like Han using the lightsabers always fascinated me. Number one, it's a great trivia answer. It gets asked a lot in the original trilogy. How many people operated light? And this is one of those like, you know, do you remember?
Gotcha. Yeah.
Gotcha. But I, as a kid, again, there I go bringing up my childhood. Right, I get it. Sorry, but I always looked at this moment as something special because, like, to even touch one as a kid, to put a lightsaber in your hand, that meant something. So to me, it was like Han gets to put that on a resume. Operated a lightsaber, like because it was the lightsaber itself was magical. Like I know I've told the story, but I think it's appropriate to bring it back. Trying to convince some kids as we dished out the roles every recess, you get to play Luke, you get to play Han, and I wanted to some people you need Lando for this because we're reenacting the skiff scene, and it was like some of my friends didn't want to be Lando. We can deal with the deeper reasons later on in life, but I was like, no, to sell it. I was like, he's got some force powers. He can call a lightsaber to him. And it was like, that was kind of the sales pitch because the lightsaber is so magical and he can use it just like Han got to use it. Right. So that's the kid perspective, but I love it. But all of it does just kind of flow nicely into what is the main event, which is leading to the big duel, leading to the fight, which is I don't want to focus on the lightsaber as just a weapon. It's also this important symbol of peacekeepers in the galaxy, but it is a weapon. It is a weapon. And there's something grand to it. And it's the raised stakes of the duels and the purpose of them and the reason they're in the story. You know, and maybe now I don't always see it as a fight, but now I see it as a stand for something bigger while you're using it. But so all those moments you're talking about, they thrill me, but it's always like, oh, but that leads to what we really have these for, which are these duels.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think I feel the same way. There are a ton of moments where it's just, it feels like it has this great symbolic power, right? Mm-hmm, like just, you know, we'll talk about some favorite moments, but just the reveal of where a saber is, who has it, why, the saber dancing in the snow is Luke's reaching out for it, telling us how much he's progressed, you know. All that stuff is vital and cool. And it's almost like those things for me in Star Wars stories, they're almost like a tease.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. You're right.
They build up the power and the myth of the thing until the moment where it really needs to be unleashed in a big conflict that really matters. That's really going to change things, you know?
Yeah. No, you summarized it quite well. You're very succinct in what I was trying to stumble through to explain, but like, yeah, like, it's like, that's cool. Han has one, but can he fight with it? Like it's the preview for the main event.
Yeah. The preview for the main event, even more succinct. And I agree with you. It was crucial to me in my, just mind wanderings as a young person about Star Wars that Han, used the lightsaber at all. I don't remember it specifically, but I think I probably fought with my brother about whether or not Han even knew where the on button was, you know, if a force user could even use it. And you do see it in this different light where it is this mystical symbolic thing. And Han's like, it's a big knife. I can use a big knife.
Yeah, it is. But I got to tell you, you know, maybe you out there listening don't believe me, but I am not lying. even as a kid, if I had an action figure with a lightsaber could be put in their hand, so I'm not talking about the telescoping ones from days gone by, but I didn't put that lightsaber in just any figure's hand. You had to earn it.
Yeah, I mean, Zuckus can't be running around with a lightsaber. That's bonkers.
What are you talking about? Like a Gamorrean garb with that? No. Which is why, I got to tell you, this is great. You've unearthed something. I even sometimes, like the Scar Squadron in the comics, which I do like, as much as Stormtroopers, specialized unit, one of them has a saber. And that pisses me off. Not because I think it's a bad decision from the storytellers, but I'm always like, you didn't earn that, man. You're like Han cutting over a tauntaun, cutting open a tauntaun. You didn't earn that. You didn't earn that. And it drives me a little crazy in a fun way.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah, and there is always that question of like, yeah, it can be used. But like another great example of great Rebel stuff of Sabine absolutely being in lots of Mandalorians wielding the darksaber, but needing to have respect for it, needing to have a relationship and an understanding of it to truly wield it. It's powerful. Yeah, and when somebody picks up a saber without understanding it or respecting it, like maybe they can slash and hack a little bit, but not the same thing.
Yeah, so funny. Great question.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Yeah. We talked about it a bunch, but I think for me, I do love all those moments and they make the big fights and the duels more weighty because they get us excited for them. But I think there is something about the idea of a duel that gets to the heart of Star Wars, right? The samurai influences and the even the Western influences, you know, it's blades, not, you know, pistol, but it gets to, samurai, Western, the Arthurian myths, you know, the roots of this is a weapon, but it is a symbol. And what are you going to choose to do with it? And particularly if you're one of the heroes who recognize that it is a weapon, but it's a weapon with meaning. Some of its greatest meaning is, you know, when do you find yourself in a moment where you feel it absolutely must be used? And there's something about the duel that gets to the absolute heart of that. There's moments where it can be like, that's a practical tool. Luke cutting open the belly of the AT-AT to throw the detonator in. Great. It's a tool. Mm-hmm. When he raises it to fight his father, it's a weapon of myth with great meaning.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So any, I know I rattled through a bunch of these examples where it's maybe a short conflict or maybe the saber is being used as more of a tool, but is there any other big non-fight moment that really speaks to you?
I go to the one of the biggest, you did kind of mention, but the cantina hand slice from Kenobi, it mesmerized me, still does. And there's obviously great purpose on it. You know, behind it, Kenobi will do what he must to defend Luke. A lot of that's played out a lot in storytelling. We see that time and time again. Right. But The fact that he did it, right? The fact that he's just like out and about, yeah, I got a saber. It's interesting to examine Kenobi at that point and that point in his life, because I think there's some fair questions of, well, why did he do that? Would he have done that 5 years ago? Would he have been afraid to do it? We're now learning 9 years ago where he was with a relationship with the lightsaber out in the desert. So now that he has it, is there something like this final stage of the journey has begun? I can't hold anything back. I am who I am. I am, General Kenobi on my final mission, and this saber's coming out. Right. Like you can look at that now and analyze it. But just then, just the act of it and the way he kind of looks around like anyone else, lightsaber goes back down. Like it's just something powerful and just downright Star Wars cool about that moment.
Absolutely. I mean, that is one of the vital lightsaber moments. And I'm really curious to see if it is going to be discussed more given Obi-Wan Kenobi. But I really do love that moment as obviously it makes sense at the time that the film was made. You got to work the lightsaber in. You got to show people how it works practically, that you're not supposed to disappear when you get cut with it, as I misunderstood as a kid. So it's got a lot of practical, you know, reasons. But in the modern context of Star Wars, I do love it as Obi-Wan going, you know, the twins are coming together. They're taking their first steps into the big galaxy. The Jedi are coming back. Why not? Yeah. Bzz, right out in the cantina in front of everybody.
There you go.
Very powerful. I think for me, some of the greatest lightsaber moments is just like non-fight moments, is just the power of them being rediscovered, reawakened. I will always remember from The Force Awakens, you know, you heard Rey hearing those whispers and she was heading down to the basement, and you know, the way the shot is kind of tracking around as the little curio box opens. And I remember just thinking in my head, like, it's in there. Like the joy of just seeing that hilt, that moment was really powerful for me. Yeah. And going to the modern, Kenobi going out to the desert with a little shovel and with some reticence, but knowing he needs to, digging it up and seeing both blades, right? The past and the baggage of the past and the future he doesn't know is necessarily going to come to pass yet, but we don't, all buried in the sand and reemerging. So damn cool.
Really love that. Great call.
All right.
Yeah, well, could I sneak in one that doesn't happen that I've thought about for so many years?
Sure.
Han, unable to reach Luke's lightsaber while they're in the Ewok net. For years, I've like, well, what if he gets it? Does he accidentally slice Chewie's thumb off? Like, he's at a bad angle. Like, well, how does this work? And, isn't the end result the same thing that happens with R2? So, you know, would they be grumpy at Han for doing that? I don't know. I love that moment. Han, can you reach my lightsaber? Because Luke's like, I got this weapon that's also a tool.
Can you reach my extremely cool space fantasy pocket knife?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I absolutely love thinking through that. Maybe that's why R2 just got to it. It's like, I have respect for that man Solo, but I do not want to be in a net with him while he has a lightsaber.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's get out of here. All right. So that is a little bit of an overview of some of our meaningful moments, thrilling moments, how we feel about what lightsaber fights are all about, and the moments that aren't lightsaber fights. We're going to take a quick break, and then we are going to dive into the original clash of blades in Star Wars.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
All right, we are back, and we are going to dive into the lightsaber battles of Star Wars by diving into the original fight between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Vader. In the film, we've seen some lightsaber stuff in the original film, Star Wars, later, A New Hope. We've seen Luke being given the saber and all of the wonderful dialogue about it. We've seen Obi-Wan defending Luke in the cantina. We've seen Luke training on the Falcon. But then there is the fight, the duel, the first chronological release order, clash of sabers. Ken, what are your current feelings on this fight, and have they changed over the years, your assessment, your relationship with the original lightsaber duel?
Always loved it, but I think my love for this fight has grown because I've almost grown defensive of the fight, if that makes any sense.
I am with you. I'm very defensive of this fight.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you make a fan film, you don't erase the heart. Never mind. All right. Different conversation. Don't erase the heart of the scene. But also this, I want to fully acknowledge and understand that the action probably doesn't hold up. I get it. And it's like handing a 45 of She Loves Me to a young person and going, now this, the Beatles changed the world with this. And you going, what? That? I totally get it. It removes some of the context, and you just see things for what they are. Everything was meant to get bigger and better than this. Everything was by Empire. Lucas is already like, we're going to do this even bigger and bolder.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But I've always loved it. I think it is the loss of Ben Kenobi is really powerful, no matter when you watch the story. And it is this great lesson that we have to learn from it. There's some great story behind it. There's enough, a lot there to analyze for the decision and Kenobi's path and Luke and Leia, all that stuff. But it's a lesson of on this journey, you're going to experience some death and you must go on. You must run, mm-hmm. Luke, run. It's really part of something I've taken with me my whole life. So it was always sad. It's still sad, though there's some peace and purpose in it. And that's only continued to grow in power, which is why I think my love of this fight has gone on and on, including, again, you and I will acknowledge we are recording this before the finale of the Obi-Wan Kenobi series. But I think that's only going to add even more context to it. The series far has added more context to it that just makes it more powerful on an emotional level, not just a story level.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, even just coming off of part five, which I felt, and I know you did too, Ken, which is so much just about Vader's psychology of needing to be the master. It already makes the beginning of this fight where I've always loved that shot where Vader's just standing there,
waiting. You
know, no theatrics, blade already out,
yes.
Ready to go, just waiting to give me one more chance, old man, to prove that I'm the master.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It already has more weight.
You got me excited. I accidentally rewatched New Hope this week, which is so, because in getting ready for this episode, I wanted to watch the fight again. And then I just watched the whole movie, and all leading up to this moment when I don't think I understood it and paid attention to it. But I think now more than ever, the fact that Vader is there with the lightsaber out, just going, we're doing this, means more to me now than it has over the years. Really does.
Yeah.
Really
not
does.
Hunting down the, you know, escaped valuable prisoner.
He doesn't care about the plans. He doesn't care about that Falcon. He does later on, all that kind of stuff. He's got a lot of reports to file on why he messed up. And he's got the tracker thing in his back pocket. We're going to talk about that stuff in a
bit. Yeah, fair enough. He's got the tracker. But yeah, but it's just all about, like, I got to face him.
He doesn't. Yeah, I love it. I love that Kenobi turns, because you see him and then he ignites, but then it's just like already there.
Yep. Already there, ready to go. Yeah, we're going to talk more about each fight as we go, the realities of filmmaking that we think about when we watch the fight. And yeah, there's no bones about it. Star Wars that came out in 1977 and blew people's minds, including the lightsaber with the limited technology they had to figure out and make it work. You know, Star Wars is an amazing example of we're reaching for something slightly beyond our grasp and we're trying to make it happen. But it obviously happened enough to fire people's imagination. And the leap in lightsaber technology from A New Hope to Empire Strikes Back is one of the larger leaps in cinema history, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I truly get that if you're coming to it, you know, if you're a prequel kid, you grew up with the prequels and that fast fighting and that epic battle between Obi-Wan and Anakin, and you've never seen, you know, your parents are showing these to you in order, and then you get here and like, what? I get it. I get it. But coming from the perspective that I had, you know, it was kind of this wonderful mystery because I didn't really remember seeing A New Hope. And this lightsaber fight existed in trading cards and frozen images and storybooks.
Right, right.
And then I was just obsessed with that lightsaber fight in Empire Strikes Back. And I remember in particular for a while, I believe when we lived in Brooklyn Center, which is a suburb of Minneapolis in Minnesota, we would go to the library and I love the library because it had a second floor that had a big opening. And I always imagined that was the Death Star. Like it had the big opening in the floor. It's kind of a, you know, different shape, like the one the Falcons parked by. But they'd have I never did it or found out how to do it, but kids could, you know, check out the AV setup. And there'd be like two kids with giant headphones, I'm sure, you know, passing various things from kid to kid. I'm sure it wasn't hygienic, yeah, yeah. But they have the big headphones on and you couldn't hear it. But every time I went to this library, kids would be watching Star Wars. Almost every time, I think the kids figured out how to fast forward or asked librarians to, they were almost always watching this fight.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have this real unique memory of like, this was this, you know, inaccessible fight that I could only sometimes get by going to the Brooklyn Center Library and hoping some other lucky kids were watching this and I could look at it. I couldn't hear it, but I could at least look at it, you know?
That's great.
So I loved it. And then as I, you know, got older and watched it a lot on VHS and compared it to The Thrill of Empire and, you know, the scale of Jedi, and it's like, it's fine. It's small. And, you know, I've made jokes about it over the years. And then, you know, the contrast between the prequels and this fight. And I think I had the like, well, what are you going to do? It's technology. It's, you know, it's time. It's, you know, things change. It was, you know, made in this order and all that. But in the last couple of years, it just that all that dropped away. And it just this fight is just about character. Mm-hmm. And I watched it again today after we recorded our episode of the Kenobi Report about part 5. Mm-hmm. And if it was filmed today, I don't know that I would change that much, because this is the last fight between these old enemies. And yeah, Vader is powerful, and you know, he could be pushing Kenobi with the Force and throwing things at him, but to me it's just grown into, it's this thrilling little chess match, you know. They're just they're both just feeling each other out, and it is smaller in scope, and you know, Vader is not being hyped up as this super powerhouse, but Obi-Wan feels about exactly where he should, like kind of just keeping Vader busy, kind of just staying alive, kind of just, you know, kind of teasing and testing him to keep him busy. And I feel like that is what's going on in the fight. And once I really embrace it on that character level, all the stuff about the time it was made and the technology falls away. And I just find it incredibly thrilling. It's small and specific and powerful.
So, yeah, this is we got some great questions coming up. I almost want to pull a lot of my answers and dump them into this bucket. you and I are in line on this. And again, acknowledging, I saw Return of the Jedi first. So imagine going from that and going back to this movie that I was one when I saw my parents' Volkswagen van, have no memory of. And like you, it lived in pictures. And to go back from Return of the Jedi to New Hope, it felt smaller then, because it is.
Yeah,
it is. It is smaller. I think so much of that is intentional, and we'll get to that here in a second. I have some thoughts on that, but I'm really with you on the thrill of it and the purpose behind a lot of the action there. I think it becomes more clear as you really focus on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just think that it is, it makes sense to me that they're not in a place in life or in their relationship to be doing flips and ripping panels off the wall and throwing them at each other. I just kind of feel like that's not emotionally where I want those characters to be, you know, like I get it. Yeah. This is that tension is always between the thrill and the meaning of like, yeah, it's a thrilling fight to me if you really engage in the emotions. So in fact, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the stakes for these characters. What do you think is at stake? Why are they fighting? What is victory for each of them?
Yeah, what is victory? Such an important question that was a big theme in episode 5, right? Of Kenobi, of the Kenobi show. So for Vader, it's just the idea of victory, but it's, you know, so there's a lot of things at play. I look at it, you know, this hole in his soul that he feels it would be filled by killing Kenobi. He wants the plans. You know, we mentioned there's the tracker and he's got that trap in place. I think he's concerned. He's been shamed by Imperials. You know, you lost the plans, you goof. So that's definitely a concern for him. But I go back to the early scene, earlier scene with Tarkin, when he's telling Tarkin, hey, he's here. You know, I feel it. And by the way, he doesn't say, I haven't felt this for 19 years and 2 months and 3 weeks. He doesn't say anything. He just says, last time we met. But it's so fascinating to me that he knows escape isn't Kenobi's plan. So to me, what he want, it's all about power and domination, and none of that will fix anything for Vader. We know this, but this is where it fuels in some of the stuff you were saying earlier, Joseph. He knows, he says, he acknowledges he has no thoughts of escaping. So either Kenobi thinks he can defeat me, but I think in the back of Vader's head, he knows I'm going to win at this point. So he goes out there, lightsaber already ignited. And I think that's a little bit of why he might come across as trepidatious. If you're looking at the fight compared to the other ones, I think mm-hmm. I don't want to add too much now versus what was then, but I think there's a little bit of like, what's he planning?
I agree with that very much.
Yes. So what's he got in his back sleeve, back pocket and under up his sleeve and his back sleeve, which is another piece of clothing. sorry there. My word enchilada is shooting out everywhere again.
I think that should be a new phrase at Force Center. What's he got up his back sleeve?
Yeah, or word breed. I got a word breed is what I got. But you know what I mean? Like, so that's why when you said, I don't know if I'd change much if I reshot this. I agree with that 100%. Cause I think, for him to go like, escape isn't his plan, I'm going to go face him. But like, yeah, we know he wants to win and kill Kenobi, but like, what? And then when he does win, Vader is bested even in the victory. Yeah. And that stunned reaction to the vanishing and then being blocked off from the Falcon. It's like, he's like, I won. Oh, wait, what's this? Oh, and the other thing I want, I can't even get to. He won, but immediately knows Kenobi is still the teacher. Just immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
I won't change that. Yeah,
no, I totally agree, and I think again, it's interesting for us to be recording this now because whatever that final confrontation is, maybe we'll put even more nuance in this fight, or even slightly different perspective. I'm so anxious to see, and so lucky you in the future who are listening right now. But yeah, no, I think as it stands, Vader is in it for domination, for vengeance, but more than anything. For proving his own power to himself, right? He is stomping around the galaxy, and on a physical level, pretty much nobody can stop him. But even in this film, he's frustrated that with all this power, there's still things in the way, right? I mean, that Leia is going around doing the bidding of the rebellion, and he kind of can't. He's taking risks, you know. You know, and he's even yelling, there'll be no one to stop us this time, right? The Senate, red tape of the Senate is still, the political maneuvering of the Senate is still a problem that gets wiped out mid-film. But from the perspective of Vader, it's still like, all this problem, and I lost those plans. I slaughtered everyone in that hallway, and it was cool. And the ship still got away, you know? Yeah, yeah. And I tracked it here, and it still got away. That grasping for power, but particularly this relationship with his old master, right? I think that's just so much what Chapter 5 of Kenobi was about, is Vader. What's at stake for Vader in this fight is proving to himself that he is the master. And I think in that, there's also the like, okay, I and my Inquisitors have slaughtered most of the Jedi. There may be some dregs out there.
Yeah,
Kenobi is the last big one. Whatever, who knows what they think about Yoda. Vader does not show any knowledge or any hangups. You know, Vader does not spend any time in the original trilogy going, and also Yoda. In fact, he seems very ignorant of the possibility. Mm-hmm. So I think that Kenobi also represents, like, this is the last spark of rebellion of the Jedi. And if Vader can slice that out, then he can slice out Anakin too, right? He can slice out that last spark of something else. You know, he can dominate Kenobi, and Vader can dominate Anakin if if Kenobi falls. And I think even though he does have that moment at the end, which we'll talk about, of I think he kind of wins the battle. He tries to spin it that he did, right? When he's got that conversation with Tarkin, I'm like, it's a great day at seeing the end of a Kenobi. And in the back of the mind, he has to be like, the bleep was that about him disappearing? Is it really? You know, like, he clearly has no idea. He doesn't know what happened, right? But it's gotta, you know, make him just paranoid that there's still something going on with Kenobi.
Did you drop this cake when you were cooking it? No, it's good. Have it. Well, to me, it might be the, correct me if I'm wrong. It just kind of, you know, this big giant steak is truly the spark of hope in the galaxy. I think that's everything. I really think that's what they're fighting over, like whether they know it or not. I think Kenobi does know it. I think that's what our next part of this question is, but yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So for Vader, it is domination. It's proving to himself that he's the master and in snuffing out all sparks from Anakin internally, from the rebellion, all of it, in finally proving his power. And then he'll be happy. Right. Mm-hmm. But I think for Obi-Wan, for Ben Kenobi, Obi-Wan Kenobi, this is what's so fascinating about this fight is it when you're watching A New Hope in the context of A New Hope, this isn't really Vader or Kenobi's story. This is a little side drama in the story of Luke and Han and Leia, right?
Yeah.
But then with the context of the prequels and all the other storytelling, it you know, takes on this, it's the end of their journey, right? This movie is the beginning of the next generation and the end of the older generation, in some respects for Obi-Wan. But I think for him, it's about responsibility, right?
Yeah.
I feel like on a practical level, it's, you know, distract Vader, because if his focus goes to anything but me, there's a huge risk of him, harming or discovering the twins or both. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just responsibility that this is what is needed of me. Mm-hmm. But I also think there's just like such acceptance of his destiny, you know, the way he tells Luke that, you know, he and Luke's destiny are along different paths. You know, it's not like he's like planning from this from the day he wakes up, right? Like maybe he senses something in the Force, but like when they first get captured by the tractor beam, he's like turning it around. He's not like, no, this is right, you know? But I think once he gets there, once he knows like Luke and Leia are about to be reunited, he needs to get the tractor beam free so they can get out of there, have some hope. He knows Vader's on the station. He knows Vader senses him on the station. And I think that's when he leaves that control room and tells Luke, you know, our destiny lies along different paths.
Mm-hmm.
I think at that point for him, he's like, I've trained for this. I know that I can still be of service. I can still watch over Luke, even if I take the step away from the mortal plane to the next adventure. I think he is going there with just this no point in trying to evade the conflict. Mm-hmm. I definitely have to keep him busy. But he is going into that fight, I think, ready to move on. So he is heading into that fight with his victory condition is keep him busy. Mm-hmm. I can't lose. There's no personal risk to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said. I had put a note of, you know, I don't know what point of the adventure Ben realizes this is it for me and that we'd have to ask him, but I really do think you kind of answered that. Because, it's totally a stall. It's totally getting the twins together. By the way, there's some beautiful stuff I've seen out there of, you know, he looks over and sees Luke and Leia running, and now because of the additional context of the Kenobi show, you know, hey, they're together, I've done my job type of vibe. I would not counter that at all, and run with that and say, hey, I don't know, Lucas didn't even know Leia was the sister at that point, so it's how Alec Guinness played it, which is also why it's a drum I keep banging around here. The genius of Guinness's performance is the amount of tip of the iceberg storytelling he bakes into every beat of Kenobi. We have this additional storytelling that you can make add to it and make it all work and in a great way because of those moments. So when he does look over, I can accept it now that he's like, my job here is done. But anyways, I digress a bit there. I think you're right. He knows that Vader hasn't changed, and maybe that's part. I don't think Vader's gonna hold out his hand and say, please, you know, pray with me and let's redeem myself or anything here. But you know, he enters that fight. I think he's testing him a little bit too, just to make sure he's the same guy I left. He's the same guy I know. And I've got, I'm going to get the true victory here. And he knows that. And he knows that. And everything about it is just holding on until it's time for me to go.
Yeah. And there is tension in the actual fight. And he's got like some great, like wide open alarmed eyes. Cause I think there really is like a, you know, again, we'll see what happens in their final fight, but there is a sense of like, yeah, no, he's powerful. That blade, I'm blocking his blows, but I am feeling that reverberating up my, you know, just double sun baked old body. And, you know, I am, you know, new forms of arthritis are being invented in my limbs right now. Every time he cracks his blade against mine, he is powerful. Well, and he physically, no, I think this is part of the reason I wouldn't change anything. Physically, Vader could beat him 87 times in a row physically. And that's not what this fight is about for Ben, for Kenobi. It's just keeping him busy, staying in the fight long enough to know that Luke and Leia are where they need to be.
That's it. Because if he dies too early, it's over. Vader stomps on in there and keeps all Han, Chewie, all of them. He keeps the Falcon there. He doesn't need the tracker at that point. Maybe you could argue they want him to escape. Leia certainly thinks so. It's been used before. I get that. But we'll never know. Because Kenobi did his job. He held on long enough. That's part of the risk. That's part of those eyes being wide open. Oh, bleep. He could get me now, and then we got more problems.
Yeah, so I don't mean to suggest that he's just super zen. I think he is zen about his, final fate. But a part of the motivation is that responsibility, that distraction, keeping the next generation safe. In some ways, this is what I've been, you know, training to do for a long time, and I got to stay in the fight long enough to make this happen.
That's the risk. That's the risk.
Yeah, yeah, and I do love that it is just this weird Star Wars poetry with Episode 3. That Episode 3 is this fast paced, you know, lava baked, brutal fight. But at the end of the day, it's the psychology that wins, right? He kind of knows that I just need to get a better position, and Anakin is gonna overestimate his power and his need to win. And Kenobi defeats him in flames and fury and horrific, violent, severed limbs. Yeah. And this time it's the peaceful version of that, of like, even to the point where like he tells him, right, the famous line of, you know, I'll become more powerful than you can possibly imagine. He straight up tells him, hey, Anakin, buddy, after all these years, I still know something you don't, and you still don't understand what's at stake in the fight other than power domination. And I'm telling you to your face that you don't know what's going on. And I think it's a great tactic, because I think it just makes Vader, you know, more anxious of like, what don't I know this time? How's he going to get me this time? And I watch this fight, and like Obi-Wan Kenobi won this fight, no problem. When you look at what is the fight truly about, and Vader got nothing.
Yeah. He got a stat in the back of his baseball card that equals nothing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk a little bit about the environment, because that's something that's come up in recent discussions of like how people rate lightsaber fights, of like, is the location cool? How does the environment of this fight help tell the story or contribute to the thrill factor? This is an awesome place to fight.
It drives home the point that this is, it's claustrophobic for Kenobi. There's everywhere you look, there's a wall, a door, a chasm, something's keeping him there, right? There's no escape. And he already, I feel, knows that based on what you and I have been talking about, but it just, as a viewer, you're like, it's just the weight of it is crushing. This is where you're at, and it's tough to get out, and you got to find it maybe a different way. Again, he's seeking a different kind of victory, but I think that works. I love it that it's in this, undistinct hallway, you know, it's an access corridor. We're fighting behind the kitchen. It just has always worked because it isn't out in the open. It isn't the lava. It isn't the water on, Rise of Skywalker. It isn't any of that stuff. It is simple, straightforward, and claustrophobic.
I love thinking of it as the back hallway. They're like, hey, if we open this door, we'll be into the green room for the cosplay competition before you go out on stage, because you're in the back of a hotel.
Trust me. I've had a few confrontations in mall corridors. So they're there's something special. So yeah,
you've had it. The Terminator's had it in Terminator 2, Jack Bauer many times. It's a violent place.
The outside of, not the inside of Terminator 3, but that outside was my mall. That Chase was my mall.
Wow. Nice. You can have a fun day in Los Angeles going to the various malls that added up to that fight, right?
Yes, there's quite a few.
Yeah, but I love that it is just it's cold and sterile, right? And it is sort of like this is an imperial space. These are the kind of spaces that Vader lives in now. Mm-hmm. Rigid, mechanical, cold, absolutely aesthetically pleasing and interesting to us as an audience, but from Kenobi's perspective, it's just like it's kind of a perversion of the kind of spaces they spent time in as brothers during the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine for Kenobi too, of like, hey, I remember that, that lighting scheme, that decoration, that door shape, that was everywhere in those ships that we fought on in the Clone Wars when we were brothers, when we, in hindsight, shouldn't have been fighting. So thinking about it from Kenobi's perspective, like, yep, this is where it ends, kind of in the House Vader belt, this cold, sterile, mechanical space.
Yeah. raising my hand. I'm raising my hand. I love that because, again, it's this technological terror that, by the way, you know, we know Vader has some issues with that, but it's the Empire and that can't stop Kenobi. No matter what you build, that's no moon. It's a space station. Doesn't matter. I'm getting the victory here. So I do love the image of that.
Yeah. I do. I love Kenobi looking at an Imperial facility and going, I can sneak through that.
Yeah.
They haven't built a facility I can't sneak through yet. This is just a little total headcanon detail. It was something that came up when I was working on the sort of one person Kenobi's life show that I've mentioned a couple times that a wonderful actor, James Arnold Taylor, was interested in. So I had a great time playing with those ideas. I was trying to think through this fight, you know, like really practically, like what kind of detail would make it feel real? And it was a total headcanon thing. I love the idea that Obi-Wan's robe is still so encrusted with the sands of Tatooine. He's walking on those nice, clean Imperial floors, and somebody's coming through going like, where's this sand coming from? And the Vader's stomping on that robe, and there's like a little plume of that sand that is a symbol of his, you know, painful childhood. Yeah. That gritty, organic mess on the nice, clean Imperial floors. There's nothing in the film. I haven't zoomed in and said, yes, there's sand there. Like it's total headcanon stuff. But I think about that a lot.
I love that. I love that. Vader just calling for whatever the version of Opeep it is for this era of the Empire.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to talk about this every time we talk about a fight. And maybe as we go on, there won't be as much to say, but definitely early on here. What sort of realities of filmmaking do you think about when you watch this fight? When you watch it from a more technical eye, what kind of things do you think about?
Look, I guess it's, I don't know. I'm going to be all over the place here. I'll warn you right now. I think one of the conversations that's happened for years is the age of the actors. You know, Prowse wasn't super old, by the way, but also Bob Anderson's in there and everything. Like, here's my thought on this. Yeah, you could look at the limitations of the time, the way they shot it, the blades, how they were constructed, and how were they going to, you know, rotoscope it now that we're going to make it look. There's some technical things that
trying to make it glow in reality in camera. Yeah.
Yeah, it was tougher. So there's a lot of that jumps out at you. It still does. But look, you could have easily brought in younger stunt people or had, Diamond Craig? Is it Craig Diamond? It's the stunt guy. He's the Tusken Raider also as well.
Yes. I'll look up his name, but yes.
Yeah, bring someone in there and go all over the place. But I got to tell you, this question's great for this fight because the reality of this goes back to your idea of, I don't know how much you change if you reshoot this. Maybe there's a little bit more speed to the actual fight. But this is the type of duel Lucas wanted, in my mind. And there's quotes you could probably pull to back that up. It's a little heavy. It's plodding. It's more of a, I don't know, broadsword fight. I'm not a trained sword fighter. My fiance is. I'll ask her. You and I talked about the feeling around of each other. I fear Vader's got a little fear in the back of his mind. It's a classic duel. And by the way, for the record, if you watch it again, it's not as slow as you might remember.
Mm-mm.
The strikes, especially at the beginning, have a lot of force to them. You're talking about Kenobi's wide open eyes, but there's some force behind it. And I think fight doesn't get that kind of credit for it. I think you can focus on some of the other little moments where the lightsabers look a little different because the technology is different, mm-hmm. where you're looking at what is a 63, 64 year old Alec Guinness, which by the way, ain't that old, especially now, maybe more than, you might, it's sometimes where it's, I don't want to say it's a false narrative that's happened over the last few decades, but it's not all true. I think a lot of it was intentional. I think this is what Lucas wanted. He knew this is the kind of fight he wanted, even though he had some limitations on how to execute.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a very samurai fight. It is a, you're reading your opponent and you're seeing the move that they're going for and you're blocking them and you're trying to make them second guess the move that you're going to do. It is pretty fast. That, you know, a lot of the love of lightsabers came from this. I mean, obviously it's Luke training remote and the great hut of exposition where he first ignites it and all the quotes about the lightsaber fired people's imagination. But, you know, when we talk about the thrill of the two blades crackling together, this is where it started. And
yeah,
the crackle and the tension between the blades, it's there. And there is a lot of speed, but a lot of it, I think, is the way it is framed, right? There are a lot of relatively tight shots where you kind of can't see. They're not, you know, and Kenobi's one spin is kind of slow.
100%, 100%, 100%.
But it's to me, it's a little bit about the tightness, the framing of the battle.
Yep. I think you're right. I think maybe, you pull back a little bit. And like I said, there could be a little bit more overall, I don't know, momentum to the fight, energy, but it's there. And a lot of the strikes, again, watch it again. It's so, in the beginning, they're hard strikes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, when I watch it, I just, by the way, it's Peter Diamond is the.
Peter Diamond. Thank you.
Peter
Diamond. It's not Neil Diamond. It's not Neil Diamond, right? Okay.
It's not Neil Diamond or Craig Hardrock or
around the galaxy.
Peter Diamond, who pops up in some good Doctor Who fights too. And like, all right, I'm happy when Peter Diamond's there. I mean, I think of what an accomplishment it is for its time. Instead of the like, if you went back and made it with this technology, you know, would it look different? Like the shot of, you know, Obi-Wan igniting his blade, Vader just standing there with the blade ready, right? Held down, but ready to go. It looks like he's sulking in the corner at a party. I love it. But like when Obi-Wan first ignites his blade, it's different than other ignitions. There is a little jump, you know, in the film that you can see in that. But it's still cool. It's still thrilling. In fact, in some ways, it's more thrilling to me because it's different. It's, you know, just filmmakers inventing something and scraping by trying to find a way to make it happen. And you can kind of feel that. And for me, that's interesting. Yeah. I think I go back to then what I said of like what could be looked at as limitations. And I'm sure some fans do. And I totally get that. It also just, it feels so right for me because it is about them testing one another. And Vader is about power, not speed. He's hacking. Those are some of the shots I like where I go like, oh, like you were saying, like, oh yeah, it's not as sort of slow or lame or whatever word you want to use. As I remembered it, there's a lot of, scary Vader hacking. So speaking of that, let's talk about the thrill factor. Do you have a favorite moment of thrill? We'll talk about thrill and then we'll talk about favorite moments of character or banter. But let's start with the thrill, just cool lightsaber stuff.
We already discussed it, but I did put down Vader waiting blade out. And then Kenobi's kind of ignited the blade. That is truly a round one. Ding, ding, ding. The fight is on and it still gets me. And I'm so glad we discussed it and both had the same idea about Vader. Just turn the corner and Vader's like, what's up? We're doing this. I love that. It's just great. It's a great way to enter a fight. Both of them, both sides of it. I love it. You recently highlighted this on the Star Wars ranked best Kenobi moments. That wonderful sly smile on Kenobi's face before he is, you know, cut in two. It's an emotional thrill. And again, you could add so much to it of the twins are together or Luke's there. The mission goes on. I've done my job. All of it counts to whatever you feel at the moment. It's a great, again, Guinness. He's a legend for a reason. I just love it. I love the way it's played. It's thrilling.
Yeah. Yeah. No, a huge emotional thrill for sure. Absolutely. I think for me, the two parts of the fight that I really enjoy There's that moment where Vader hits the wall and the flames go up and Obi-Wan's like, damn, it's a close hit. That might've been it. Right. And kind of scampers away from it. That's like one of those moments that like, gives it power and does make Vader scary. And I love the practical effect too of getting setting up the sparks and the flame shooting out of the wall. The other moment of the fight that's thrilling to me is it, there are a lot of beats of this, but there's one at the first cut when we cut away from the fight where Vader has said, your powers are weak, old man. It's clear. And Obi-Wan's just trying to psych him out. And there's Alec Guinness does just those little spins where it's just like he's almost, I hate to say it this way, but it's the way I got to say it. He's just kind of almost teasing the tip of Vader's blade with his. Yeah. And it really is that it's just that little feint of like, where am I going to go? Where am I going to go? And it works really, you know, who cares how much was intended at the time for myself? I don't care how much was intended at the time. It really works for the psychology that's been built up over the years of Vader being like, I think I got him real easy, right? I'm way stronger than him. I got him, right? But then those little feints are like, Do you? And I love that shot. And it's just like, it's the different technology. So it's a slightly different shot where the camera's just really kind of looking down the barrel of the lightsaber and it looks a little different. And that's interesting to me too. But I just love the little spins, little. Where am I going to go? What am I going to do?
What am I going to do? Look over here. What's in this hand? That's great. And not for nothing. I want to highlight Vader's absolute home run swing at Kenobi to end it. He's like, all right, I'm hammering Hank Aaron. Here we go. And
do you think he should have pointed at the stands of where Kenobi's, the upper half of Kenobi's body was going to land?
Yeah. Babe Ruth of the 34 series. Here we go. I'm predicting this whole run. Yeah, absolutely. No, because especially now, but, you know, where we know so much more of the story, and that includes Empire, Return of the Jedi, by the way. But it's such Vader going, finally. Oh, I'm ending all this pain and suffering in my soul. Oh my God, where is he?
Yep.
And so he winds up, man. He's swinging the fences, and I really love that.
Yeah, and it really is like he should have maybe questioned that of like, why would Kenobi be raising his blade? And there's nothing. There's like, all right, you old fool.
I finally got him. And that, I mean, that mask is so full of expression in that one shot of, huh? That's the true what?
Yeah, and that stomping's quite aggressive.
Yes.
It's not a tentative little, like, what's it is? Like, you know, it's a great shot. There's some comedy to it, too. Like, did he shrink? Like, what? Is he in there?
Is the Meeper gas gone in there? What's going on?
Exactly. So some thrilling moments. Some just crackling where they're testing each other. All of that stuff is great. You brought in the smile is a thrilling moment. Let's talk about those moments of character or banter or kind of story. Do you have some other moments in this relatively short fight?
I mean, only a master of evil, Darth. I mean, and why did he call him Darth? I don't know. I don't care. It's hilarious to me. It's such a little whatever that you think you got me. I love it. I love the little. It keeps in line with the Kenobi that we would know more of and love as the years go on.
Yeah, now I am the master, and I just think, whatever, Darth. Like, you know, I'd like the reading perfectly that it's a sort of like, you know, I'm gonna, you know, sort of disrespect you with your title, whatever, sir. Yeah, whatever, Vice President. You know.
Yeah. By the way, I think if the ghost of Owen was right there, he'd be like, oh, sick burn, dude. I respect that.
Only a master of evil. Yeah. It would be good, sassy Owen. I do love the line, your powers are weak, old man.
Oh, it's such a great James Earl Jones, just hitting every syllable. Love it.
Yeah, and it's just one of those lines that's great of like, it's great pulpy adventure serial villain dialogue, but then the way the word weak has, you know, evolved in our society, it also sounds like a weird sick burn.
Yeah.
Like you're weak it's got a slightly different connotation. Would be remiss if we did not discuss one of the most famous lines in this fight, in this film, I would argue, in Star Wars. You can't win, Darth. If you strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine. Obviously, that is a line that sometimes gets poked at. In the last week, I think I've seen the meme of like, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine, you know, becomes a ghost and sits on a log, or, you know, becomes a ghost and whispers to a kid. I love it for everything that we've talking about of what's at stake in the fight of Obi-Wan saying, you don't understand the battle you're fighting. You can't win because it's not about domination or physical strength. So you can't ultimately win this, which is a lesson that it's clear Obi-Wan has been trying to impart to Anakin for a long time. It's a really fun line to quote to poke a little bit of fun at. But to me, it's, yeah, he becomes so powerful that he can keep helping Luke. And without this power of retaining his consciousness within the Force, the Death Star is not destroyed. Luke needs that guidance. Luke needs that encouragement to use the Force. Without that, it's over. Mm-hmm. That's power.
Yeah, I always take it as Kenobi in a way saying, I'm going to some spot that you can't reach me. All your power in the world, you're never touching me in the world I'm going to. Maybe you'll get there one day. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, and that you can't understand it. You can't understand it. I ain't leaving. I ain't going.
Yeah.
See you around, kid.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. You can just kind of interpret it as almost, I'm kind of going through the actual Star Wars, you know, the plot, the ramifications. But I love that you can also just interpret, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine, is like, I have evolved. I'm going to take the next step on a grand adventure of existence.
Yeah.
I'm untouchable. I'm completely at peace and purpose with where I'm going. And you can't touch that.
And that there is still, there's a bigger fight at stake for you, Darth, and your team could win it, but I'm going to do everything in my power where you can't touch me to help, help the fight for the others go on. So you don't understand it, Vader.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then, yes, you talked about the smile at the end very eloquently. I love how powerful it is. And I love how much more power it is getting because of the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. Additional power. So I debated adding this question, but I think we don't always rank things other than Star Wars ranked, which we talk about. We want to always, approach that as we are sharing our rankings, our opinions. You know, we are not doing this is definitive. Our opinions are the truth.
Well, yeah, over the years, we've moved towards our favorites versus the best.
How
we like to approach things here.
Yeah. Yep. So this is not definitive because it's our opinions. It can only be definitive of our opinions until we change them. But I want to ask, out of 10 lightsabers fully ignited, how many lightsabers do you personally give this lightsaber fight?
Well, here it is. It starts at 10, but then drops a little bit because of that Kenobi spin. It's a little slow and old. And because it seems like they're afraid to break the props in some of the stuff. So I put it at a 7. I'll put 7.5. All right. Only because, there is some realities and how it doesn't necessarily, it's hard to stand it up against other fights from a certain point of view, But as we just explained, there's a lot of reasons to love it. So I still love it. It's still important to me and my fandom. 7.5.
Well, this is going to be fun. I gave it a 7 too. This is a 7 of a lightsaber fight for me.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
So you went a little higher. Yeah, because to me, the story works great. There are thrilling moments. I am thrilled because I'm invested in the characters. It was made at a certain time. And if you watch it from different lenses, that could be really interesting if you're watching it from a historic level. But yeah, if you want a big, thrilling, epic lightsaber fight, this is a small, thoughtful little chess match between two old foes. This is sort of the cherry on the top of their epic fighting sundae.
yes the seven's a great spot to explain it, to going back to that Beatle reference I made earlier. I am a giant Beatle fan. Abbey Road's my favorite album, not Meet the Beatles, but I still love that first album too, or the first few albums.
Well, this is the Abbey Road of lightsaber fights. I think
I would say Return of the Jedi is the Abbey Road. Empire's the White Album. And this is Meet the Beatles.
So our next episode, we're going to discuss Empire and Return of the Jedi, and this is going to be fascinating because I think we have different childhood baggage about those fights. So I'm excited to get into that. Any final thoughts for now?
No, a lot of fun. I love these kind of discussions. It's the first part of an ongoing series here for a little bit, and Re-examine that fight. It's always not just because of additional material coming out, but see it again for the first time.
Yep, lightsaber fights for me are always going to be about the thrill of the adventure pulp and the thrill of the story, and some are more thrilling from the action and some are more thrilling from the story, and this one is one that offers a ton of story and character thrills. So that is it for this episode. We will return to discuss the lightsaber fights of Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, we are the Force Center Podcast feed. We are on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're available on a lot of different spots, including Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Hey, if you're on there and you have the ability to rate and review, go ahead and do that. It really helps out the show if you'd like. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us directly if you'd like at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can follow me at Ked Knapsack or go to my website, kednapsack.com. For Joseph, you're going to want to go here where he tells you.
That is right. You can find me on the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw is my handle on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. Join me there for some jokes and some action figure sharing. And if you want to check out any of the other things I've done, there are links everywhere, all over my website at josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for 7.5 lightsabers, this has been Force Center.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.